Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Gigabit Nation Broadband Talk Radio. I'm your host, Craig Settles, and I want to welcome everyone in the audience today, and thank you for taking time to be with us. A couple of weeks ago, we had on the show Michael Render, who's the president of RVA LCC, which is a research firm that's done a lot of work on behalf of the Fiber to the Home Council. Now, when Michael was here, he discussed his most recent report in September to the Fiber to the Home Council at their annual conference, and looking at the last decade and looking at how far fiber technology has come, and also how far the Fiber to the Home Council has come in the last decade. And so you can listen to his interview in the archives. Today, we have the new president of the Fiber to the Home Council, Heather Burnett Gohl, and she's going to give us a snapshot of how things look or may look going forward. So, Heather, first, welcome to the show, and thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Craig. It's an honor to be here.
And also, congratulations on your new role as president, and good luck as you take the reins in what I'm sure is a pretty exciting time for the industry and for the council.
It is. It is, you know, coming off of the disbursements from the stimulus funds that brought so much money to rural communities for build-out of fiber, seeing what's going on with Google in Kansas City, looking and seeing what Chattanooga is doing. You know, every area that's involved in fiber to the home, every one of our market subsets seems to be percolating along and really investing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's definitely a plus, and a little later on we'll talk some about that. Let's start with, I'm sure a lot of folks that will be coming in today to, in the audience are familiar with the council, at least in a general sense, but give us an overview of, you know, what's the mission of the organization, who's involved, that kind of thing, to give us a picture of what it is that you guys do.
Okay. I think, as Mike might have mentioned to you, we've been around for 10 years, just had our 10th anniversary, we celebrated in Orlando. We represent the equipment vendors, service providers, and consultants who support them who deploy fiber to the home, not fiber to anywhere else, but all the way to the house in order to bring the most advanced networks to consumers. We have a good mix of service providers. We represent any service provider who will deploy fiber to the home, so that we have rural companies, incumbents. We have some municipal networks, and we have some utilities, obviously, that have deployed fiber to the home. So the whole goal is to educate, promote, and advocate policies and practices that will increase fiber to the home for our country, for the world's consumers, really.
Right. So you've got that whole mix of folks that would constitute the, I guess, ecosystem, which is kind of a current phrase of choice or word of choice here to describe things. All the component pieces that go from the back end manufacturing all the way to getting it on your doorstep.
Correct. We have everybody from the glass manufacturers, to the engineers, you know, to the actual service provider that's using the fiber to the home technology to better serve their customers.
Mm-hmm. Are there any folks that you don't have that are part of, that you want to, like, that you're doing like an outreach to kind of include that may not have been members in the past?
I think, you know, we should, I should be clear that, you know, the big guys aren't members. I mean, obviously, they support some of our activities, but our focus is on, you know, the smaller service providers. You know, we might, who knows what will happen in our strategy session that we're taking with our biggest members next week, what we call our platinum members. But we have tended to focus on those companies that are actually driving the investment. And also to stay true to the fiber to the home concept. We have not gone looking for companies that were just doing fiber to the node or fiber to the curb, mainly because we think to really be be delivering the kind of capacity that consumers are going to need and demand, you really do need to go all the way to the house or apartment, all the way to the building.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there public sector entities that are a part as well? Because I know that there are providers that are actual communities, whether they're co-ops or government-owned networks or some variation of that.
Yes, as I said, we do have some municipals. I believe that Chattanooga, and I know, please forgive my newness, I know they go by something else, EPB.
Oh, EPB, right.
Yeah, they are a member. And so it's we do have a good cross-section.
Mm-hmm.
We don't discriminate against any kind of provider. We're just looking for companies that will do it, will build.
So is I know that one of the roles is education. You know, I looked at the the program for the conferences and so forth. Do you do a lot of interface with the public, the legislative bodies? Because I know associations have different roles. If I look at the landscape in Washington, some are more advocacy for the industry, some are, you know, strictly about membership development. Where do you guys fit into that picture?
We have tended to work more with our member companies on helping them figure out how to deploy fiber to the home. We do have a strong government relations committee. And we have a very good D.C. council who has represented the interest of fiber to the home exceedingly well through the broadband, the national broadband plan deployment, and then as we've moved through the various phases of that and the proceedings that have fallen on that. And we do get involved in legislative activity where we can make a difference. We sort of weigh our decision on how active to be in the public policy arena based on what do we bring to the table that's unique, and what do our members need that we can give them that they might not be getting somewhere else. And we will partner with other associations and with companies to pursue those goals, which will, you know, help speed fiber to the home.
Mm-hmm. So when we were talking before the show started, you had mentioned, I'm going to put you on the spot here just a little, maybe. You had mentioned that one of the steps in the selection process was they asked all the candidates for president to kind of picture what the association would look like in 2 years, and always trying to give our listeners a sort of some view of the future as well as what's going on in the present. Where, in your mind, do you see, first the industry? I guess, you know, like you're coming in, you know, new to this particular role, but you've been in the industry for a while.
Right.
Where do you see the industry in another year or so, and then where do you see the council within that realm?
So I think you're going to see a tremendous boost to the industry as the new networks get rolled online. Think about the confluence of things that are going on now. You have the networks that were funded through the stimulus plan being built. And incidentally, fiber to the home providers, I received about 2/3 of the RUS money out of that for last mile construction. So you're going to see that happen. You're going to see Google's Kansas City project coming up probably in, you know, next 18 months. You're going to see Chattanooga continuing its deployment. So you're going to have this confluence. Oh, and I'm so silly to forget this, the whole GigU rollout where they're building the new gig network to connect all the major research universities and using that as a platform deployment in those communities. So all of a sudden you have this wonderful confluence of events that are going to create what I think will be a tremendous demand from consumers that don't live in those communities. They're going to see what Fiber to the Home brings and its capabilities, and they're going to start saying, why not us? Mm-hmm. And I think it'll go, and especially as we see the growth, tremendous growth in data and video needs. You know, I think I was reading the other day, I think it's Cisco says that global IP traffic will grow four times, triple in the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that video will be 90% of that traffic. So all of a sudden the needs for bandwidth is just going to explode. I mean, I know everyone keeps saying it can't get, you know, how much faster can it explode? But so you have the confluence of communities getting it. You have the confluence of there being more need for bandwidth. And then you'll have people demanding it from their service providers. In the next 2 years, I think, you know, right now we have about 750 communities deploying fiber to the home across the U.S. There's obviously, we have North America, so there's always some in Mexico, obviously some in Mexico and Canada as well, some very robust communities. I think that will just give us a wonderful opportunity for expansion. Mm-hmm. Where do I see Fiber to the Home Council? We're going to continue to deliver and expand on our value proposition for our members. Some of the things we've been doing, which I think will afford us even greater outreach, are our webinar series. This is something we've done two since I've been on board, which was last Monday. We did one. Fortunately, I wasn't giving them, thank heavens. We did one on the changes coming to universal service. Obviously, that impacts our rural telcos and smaller telcos. And then we did one with Blair Levin on the GigU rollout and his sort of vision of why we need fiber to the home. So I think we'll be able to use those webinars to even get more information out to the public at large, not just our membership. Mm-hmm. One of the things I would like, I talked to in my interview, and it's based on a program we used here in Virginia. It's the creation of an online toolkit, which would help communities that are considering deployment walk through the process from, gosh, we'd like to have this, to how do we actually implement it. And it includes all the steps in the process, including, you know, potential funding, how you can decrease capital and operating costs if you're going to do a public-private partnership, you know, how you assess your demand, you know, what is your demand. So I would like to be able to have something out there which would really be, you know, a great help for communities that are just contemplating this for the first time.
So it would be a planning tool then?
Be a planning tool. But then the webinars themselves will continue with information that's valuable to our membership from mm-hmm. all kinds of aspects, technical and public policy, so and marketing. I think there's a real need for us to also help our service providers figure out how they're going to maximize their revenue from this investment. You know, you have to be a little creative in that. And in what offerings, what you provide your consumers.
So when do you think this might be completed?
This is my ongoing effort for the next 2 years.
Well, maybe completed is not the word. But
yes, I don't think anything's ever completed, right?
Right. But when do you think people might be able to get the first look at this and be able to do something with it?
Oh, I would hope within 6 to 9 months. You mean the toolkit?
Right.
Yes, I would hope within 6 to 9 months, but of course, that all depends on, in some ways, on resources and what comes out of our Platinum Member Strategy session next week, too. It may not,
right.
They may decide that's not something they want.
True. So tell me a little bit about the planning session. I gather it's a big strategy powwow that, what is it, the board of the council was coming together?
It's not just the board. It's our Platinum members.
Right,
it's our Platinum
right.
members. We will be gathering in Dallas to, you know, ask ourselves all those important questions. Are we doing the right things? What else should we be doing? What should we stop doing? What are our core competencies? What would you like, you know, where do you think our focus should be? I think it's, you know, as a new person in my position as the new president. It's, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better opportunity to really get a sense of what the association wants to do, what the council wants to do going forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like it'll be a pretty exciting kind of high-level, you know, get-together to kind of really hammer out some solid plans to move things forward.
It is. I mean, I think, listen, we've had a good brand. We have a great brand, in fact. And the council has grown tremendously over the last 10 years. I think we just feel like maybe it's time to stop and take stock and see where we go for the next 10 years. It may
right.
be just improving on what we have already. But, you know, every entity should do regular strategic planning. When I was in a corporation, we did it every year, you know.
Right.
Before you did your budgeting or whatever, because that sort of drove then what your tactical operational things were.
Well, I'm definitely a big fan of planning at all stages, and particularly helping communities. Because one of the things I have found is that there is within many communities a general understanding of what broadband can do. I mean, if I look at 2005, which is kind of when I jumped in, and I was focused then mainly on wireless. Municipal wireless was all the rage, and people went through a phase of, you know, why do we need to do this? Why do we need to do this? And that went on for about a year, and then there came a transition point where people, you know, they wanted to stop hearing folks tell them why they need to do it because they finally got that message. But then it was all about how do we get it done? You
right.
know, how do we move these things forward? So I think a toolkit that you're like the one you're describing should be immensely valuable just because there is not the knowledge of the mechanics of putting these things together in a lot of these situations, either when there is the municipal government itself alone doing it, or even in partnership if the partners are smaller providers. You basically have, you know, the smaller provider will probably, you know, obviously have more business sense, but still they're a smaller regional player, so having this kind of outside objective resource can be very valuable.
It is, and as I said, I am giving full credit to Virginia. I did not create this out of thin air. I was fortunate to serve on a broadband, it was called the Broadband Roundtable for Virginia, and this was one of the outcomes from that experience. And what we found is, and you're right, whether if it was a service provider, an incumbent, or just the community itself, often didn't have the resources at hand to do the kind of demand assessment. And to even think creatively outside the box, like and Blair Levin talked about this on his webinar yesterday as well. There are many ways that communities can help private entities buy down the cost of entry. You know, sharing conduit, you know, those kind of issues where they can make the operating expenses less, initial capital expenses ease in permitting, you know, all the kinds of things that add to a cost and delay construction. You know, if you're a community looking to bring in a private service provider, whether it's an incumbent or not, you should be thinking about if you really want to deploy broadband quickly, you should be thinking about all the resources at your hand that you have access to that you can help. And then the other thing is on the funding side, you know, you can get, I'm not holding myself out as an expert right now, but it used to be you could get USF money for some sort of educational institutions for rural health care. So perhaps you get some funding for those things, which then give you more money to spend on actually getting that fiber to your residential consumers' homes. So there's all of those things that can be tied up into a box. Broadband in a box, you know, to help you deploy faster.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting you bring up this issue of accelerating the deployment because the Google's point person who's driving their broadband, their community broadband effort, spoke at a conference a couple of months ago. and said that was one of the big criteria when they were looking at cities to partner with. They had 1,100 to choose from, and they looked at, well, who is going to be able to help us streamline the process? Because in their mind, there are many steps along the way that bog down the process. And so
right.
the key is to figure out what they are and how do you get rid of them. So from your perspective, you know, what are some of those things that slow down a project, and then how do you overcome those particular challenges?
Oof. Well, I would say, you know, just getting the capital is one of them, right, that we've had an issue with right now,
mm-hmm.
financing. That's one that's sort of outside of a community's control unless they want to pay for it, and that's not always ideal. Permitting is another one. I'm thinking here.
Well, the permitting is key. I would agree.
I mean, permitting and, you know, if any, you know, you need any rights away, you know, what kind of construction do you need? Are there, are there alternatives? You know, is there conduit already in place that you can use? I mean, these are all things that can be time creating.
Mm-hmm. Because I know the even with the stimulus program, one of the big hurdles was the environmental study. You know,
mm-hmm.
so it wasn't even an issue of, you know, can we get the – well, obviously the money had come through. But then by virtue of how it had come through, there were all these hurdles. You know, there were these studies and these processes and paperwork. And I think a lot of folks, you know, without harming the public good, at the same time, want to try to figure out, well, how can we make some of this process a lot easier to deal with?
And some of those are very state-specific.
Right.
As you're aware, there are certain states that have much more onerous environmental impact requirements, particularly if you're putting in facilities, which is unfortunate. So those states would have – I mean, it's a state-level requirement, so – you know, I can't solve those right now.
Well, that's a little, you know, beyond the pale in some respects. I mean, it's
sort of beyond my operating experience here.
Right. I mean, it's that. I think that from a and that may be one of the issues that you know, the group takes into account next week. You know, is how it might be in some way able to maybe partner with other organizations that can help streamline the process. I know that NATOA is an example of an organization that does a lot of work trying to, you know, deal with right-of-way issues,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you need them, but at the same time, they can't become such a burden that they prohibit the advancement of broadband as well. And, you know, maybe that kind of that partnership between associations that kind of identify and then figure out, well, then how do we collectively attack these issues, you know, might be something of merit for next week.
That's true.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
Thinking on the fly. So how helpful, you know, you talked earlier about the stimulus, and it was definitely has helped the broadband business, and that you folks got a, well,
by Richard, the home providers.
Members, right. Have folks started to translate all of that into actual action? I know there was, like I said, you know, we talked about that hiccup there in the system when people had to deal with regulation and so forth, but are these projects now moving forward? Have they gotten past all of their preliminary bureaucratic issues to move these things forward?
I believe so. Particularly, I would expect that the, you know, more on the RUST side, which is where most of the fiber to the home providers would be not necessarily on the BTOP side or the Department of Commerce side. You know, they're pretty used to building networks. So, you know, regardless of what the technology is. So I don't anticipate that we'll see the same kind of you know, they're more established companies. You know, some of the BTOP providers that got funded were relatively new entities.
Mm-hmm.
So they might have been overwhelmed by the requirements, whereas my anticipation is, and, you know, just looking at the kind of companies that got the RUST funding, is they probably are more used to dealing with this kind of these kind of issues.
Mm-hmm. So now the stimulus represents one government response, which is basically
Right. Find
money and put it to the task. And then there have been recent announcements of additional funds. RUS just had an announcement a couple
mm-hmm.
of weeks ago where they've added to the pot. Are there policy changes or improvements that could facilitate an expansion of the broadband deployment effort, do you think?
You know, it's hard to say. It's yet to be seen what the impact of these new FCC universal service funding changes will be. The
Connect America Fund.
The Connect America Fund. Whether that will be, whether it will be helpful or whether it will be proved to be, just a decrease in funding, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we're waiting on that one. Obviously it would be great to have even more funds available from RUS, but given the economic realities right now, it's unlikely.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean then that you expect that hope will lie with more companies such as Google becoming involved? I mean, Google is kind of a unique duck in terms of how they have approached this thing, but, you know, I got to believe there's more than one Google out there, you know, more than one company with capacity that might look at this and say, you know, we got to jump in this as well.
Well, I think it's a combination of things. There, you know, you don't have to have the funding capacity of Google. I haven't been in the job long enough to be able to talk authoritatively about the economics, but I know that they are it's becoming much more reasonable. You can't say that fiber to the home is expensive anymore. There have been advances in the deployment that have made it a much more competitive offering. And then when you put the revenue capabilities on top of that, the economies have really changed. So it may be that in and of itself will drive more private investment. Plus the demand, as I said at the beginning, is going to explode.
Mm-hmm. Now you also, I think, have a situation that as it becomes more affordable, and you don't necessarily need someone with Google's muscle, at the same time, getting business involved in a similar fashion may still make sense. Like, for example, Corning in three counties in upstate New York decided to invest $12 million in a network for those three counties. And part of it is because they're headquartered there, and a lot of their company operations will benefit by having the network. So, again, I look at that and I say, well, there's got to be more companies like that, you know, that aren't necessarily technology companies in the Google sense. They're not necessarily providers, but at the same time, there can be a business case made, or that they can make a business case, say, you know, this makes sense for us.
Right. No, and I think you're right. I think that will happen.
Mm-hmm. Because one of the things, I'm
and you know, just to go back, that's sort of the premise of the Gig U thing, that
right.
It won't be the companies, but it'll be the research universities, and they'll be building out in their communities.
And you know, I think it also speaks to, you know, if we throw the net wider. I did a presentation in Missouri where I said, you know, everybody needs to step out of the box and look at different ways, different potential partners, different potential funding models. There's no reason to always look at things in the same, you know, four walls that we typically see. You know, I think especially when we look at some of the policy decisions that come out of Washington. But I think that, you know, you get a bunch of creative people around the room, both in government and in nonprofits and in the private sector, sort of like, you know, that your membership represents. I think you can start, or collectively folks can start thinking of new ways to tackle these issues.
I agree. There has to be, you know, we're not going to have our government is not going to pay for this.
Right.
Private industry in one form or another is going to have to make the investment case and then follow through on the investment. But then again, that's all with the demand stimulation, which I think will come, that will also drive some of that investment. In other words, you won't, as a service provider, you'll probably be in a situation where you can't afford not to invest.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, the neighboring, somebody to your east or west may decide to invest for you.
Right.
Especially as your consumers demand it. So I think, you know, I think that will drive a lot of this investment as well.
Right. And I will assume that as people start hearing about the successes of places such as Santa Monica, California, and Chattanooga, Tennessee, you know, just regular everyday communities, you know, you sort of take it out of the spotlight of the Google thing, but you look at these other communities and how they've approached it, that their successes will inspire other communities to want to follow suit.
Exactly. It's going to be a snowball effect. It really is.
Right.
And it isn't just in this country. I mean, that's one thing I wanted to. There's an international phenomenon with, you know, fiber to the home is not just being deployed here. It may follow a different model, in different countries. But in fact, there will be a ground. This will add to the whole groundswell as other nations. Actively deploy fiber to the home.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about economic development, and one of the things we talk about a lot is, you know, you don't have to be in New York City to reach the world market anymore, or even in Washington. You know, you can be down in Abingdon, Virginia. If you have access to fiber to the home and that kind of, and then to the World Wide Web, you can live in any wonderful place you want, and be successful with your business. And, you know, that's the other driver for this is the need for, especially when you look at some of the areas that have been hardest hit by the recession, these communities want ways to employ their folks and offer employment options for their young people so they stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that can only happen by having the kind of broadband capabilities that fiber to the home can bring.
Right, and I see, you know, we talked, or you mentioned earlier, that government's role may not continue to be on the financial side or financing side, but I know, like, for example, there's a movement in Congress to pass a law that basically says for every government project that involves transportation, you know, major construction, that kind of thing, that conduit gets laid at the same time because you don't really add to the cost of the project, but you advance the core infrastructure fairly quickly if all of a sudden you start piggybacking on top of other projects. And to me, I sort of see that as, you know, a way the government can be part of that creative solution.
Correct.
You know?
I agree with you completely. I mean, it used to be I think you could have access to right-of-way along federal highways, but you yourself would have to go and do the trenching and, you know, the getting in the conduit. How wonderful it was already there.
Mm-hmm. So let's move to another topic near and dear to my heart, which is bridging this gap between middle mile and last mile, because a lot of broadband stimulus money went out to middle-mile projects, and a fair amount went out to last-mile projects, but not necessarily in the same place. So you have projects that are happening without their component part. In other words, you know, you're building, or not you, but, you know, they're building, you know, 200-300 miles of fiber in Virginia or Missouri or where have you, and which is good. You know, we connect the anchor institutions and so forth. But then where does all the last mile come in? Because if the argument against doing middle mile build outs was the CapEx expense, I would think that providers, private sector companies are going to still have the same resistance to doing last mile projects because they're going to say, well, you know, where do we get our money back from that? Even though it's less money, we still have to make money back. So my question is, how do you see us bringing together last mile projects where there is, you know, all this growth of middle mile projects, or the reverse? You know, you've got people that have money for last mile projects, but there's got to be some significant backhaul, especially, you know, given, you know, the vision that you have that says, okay, well, our demand is going to quadruple, it's going to go through the roof. That last mile project then is going to need more, is going to need more backhaul. How do we bridge these two? Because it seems like we're building in tandem, but not necessarily together.
Well, that is a big question. You know, I'm trying to visualize all this in my head. you know, sort of like the Alaska Bridge to Nowhere, right?
Right.
If you build fiber to the home in a community that's not linked, you're in big trouble. Because you'll only be able to talk quickly and share data quickly amongst each other, not with any kind of relevant connectivity to the rest of the world.
Exactly, exactly. That's the danger I see.
It is, and you know, I would hope and haven't looked at this, but you're somehow hopeful that when they did these awards, which probably is just way too optimistic on my part, mm-hmm. that there was some sort of effort to connect middle mile with last mile, but you're probably undoubtedly right. So that will be a challenge if we do have, you know, the actual long-haul networks that take you into the Internet are not close or connected with the fiber-to-the-home providers. But I would think, I mean, I'm speaking totally off the top of my head here, but I would think that a fiber-to-the-home provider, one of my service providers, would think about how they were going to be connected to the greater, you know, to the long-haul fiber as part of their demand assessment and feasibility studies. It just wouldn't, you know, like one of our, you know, throughout Virginia, we have a rather, and I'm sorry to speak about Virginia, that's what I know best at this point, so I didn't want any of my members to think that I'm dissing them in any way.
But I think everybody understands.
Throughout Virginia, we do have a middle-mile provider, MBC, Mid-Atlantic Broadband Communications, and they mm-hmm. are also hooked into something called Luenesco, which stands for the counties in Southwest Virginia that built it. I think mm-hmm. it's Lee, Wise, and Henry County, perhaps, Luenesco. And then we have one of our very successful service providers, Bristol Virginia Utilities, BVU,
right.
who's a last mile provider. So fortunately, those guys are all hooked together, and then NBC has long haul that connects it into the big Equinix machines in Ashburn and on to the world. And they also go south to Atlanta, so they have connectivity there. You know, and one would hope that that was sort of the model that was going on throughout there, that the middle mile project should have been fashioned to connect communities where we're also deploying broadband to, you know, fiber to the home, last mile connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we'll do if we find sort of those islands.
Interesting.
I haven't looked at a map to see if that happened.
Mm-hmm. So I think then kind of taking this discussion to the next step, in addition to trying to prevent, you know, like I said, islands of silos of technology and so forth, there's also the issue, too, is that you reach a certain point and you find that it makes no economic sense to run a wire somewhere. You know, you've got the far reaches of the county, the rural area, the hills area, whatever that we're dealing with here. should it be the mission of the fiber industry literally to go everywhere, or is there a point when someone says, you know, maybe this doesn't make sense, maybe we call in a WISP, or maybe we call in several, you know, wireless IoT to create extensions to the network rather than trying to take it literally to every premise?
I'm not convinced that we know the economics. That we know the economics closely enough to make that determination. You're sort of relegating the person at the end of that line to a less than desirable throughput, and maybe less than they need.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I'm not sure that the economics aren't changing enough that, you know, to put in the radios and the cell towers and everything else you'd need to get to that far off location, you couldn't string fiber. So, you know, I think the jury's out on that.
So you're kind of taking a wait and, well, not so much a wait and see. It sounds like we're doing several things in parallel. I mean, we're building, we're doing, you know, what we can, what we've got, but also keeping an eye on the fact that every year costs go down.
They do. They
costs
go down.
Costs go up.
I was down talking to an institution, and I was actually speaking with an institution in Virginia that does have a lot of wireless, broadband wireless, and their analysis was it's much cheaper for us to pull fiber. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. I'm not sure that those perceptions are reality.
Right. And Michael, when he was on, you know, also talked about that. You know, he put the big picture out there of, you know, there's the upfront cost, yes, but then you have the long term, you know, the fact that if I build a 1 gig network today, I don't have to rebuild the network to get 100 gig at some point in the future. I just, you know, replace certain electronic components along the route of the network or of the infrastructure, and that's the cost. I mean, there will be money, but it won't be like I said, you're reinventing the wheel every couple of years, which is what scares the
you know, we call it making the consumer's network future-proof.
Right. And if you factor that in, then the economics look a whole lot different as a result of that.
Correct. I think unfortunately, and that's why I'm very excited about what's going on in the marketplace. I think we sort of went through this period, and we're just still in the middle of it because of the feeding frenzy, you know, created by the big incumbents.
Mm-hmm.
That wireless was everything in the be all end all. Well, you know, it's my wireline. Well, I fortunately live in a fiber to the home house, so I know exactly all the wonderful benefits of having fiber to the home. My wireless doesn't work so well in the house. I mean, I had to get an extender, and it's still drops, and you know, and is that the kind of tech? Is that what you want to promise somebody who is hoping to, you know, stay current on their educational requirements, who may be running a business from their house? I mean, it just isn't. You know, it's not where it needs to be. And whereas, if you can get fiber to the home, they're set for probably for their lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Could it be sometimes that wireless is a good stepping stone? In other words, you know, you've got a community, it's on the ropes, it's trying to keep its people there, it's trying to help people, you know, improve their professional skills and
it's still,
their education.
If they're going to make the investment, why shouldn't they find a way to make the investment in the technology that's going to be there for them and grow?
Right. I'm putting it out there kind of as a devil's advocate thing.
Yeah.
But
no, I
know,
and that I think unfortunately that sort of view, not or those are the arguments that have sort of taken our eye off the ball on fiber deployment.
Because I think that some of the people who make that argument the most vigorously are the ones who are in political situations where it's very difficult to muster the political will that's needed, because especially when you talk about municipal networks and public-private partnerships, there has to be a certain amount of political willpower to make, you know, to go through all the challenges that will come with this.
It's true. You have to have some sort of leadership. Isn't that true for every area of the government?
Just about. Without a doubt.
There has to be somebody that's willing to really lead the process. It could be a county manager or, you know, a community leader. And you're right, that does take some sort of political will, but that's going to be true if you decide to spend a fortune doing wireless investment as well. So, I mean, To me, you need to take a longer view of the investment and think about what will actually serve your constituents, you know, be the end user customer or your business users, and over the longer haul.
Okay.
And with what they need to grow.
Right. I mean, I don't argue with the argument for growth, because clearly I've made that argument a bunch of times. I also at the same time listen to a lot of people who talk about, they can get X out of the budget. They can get X through a city council or a county commission, the body or whatever the board happens to be called. And, you know, X times whatever it will take to build the fiber part becomes problematic. And as the price of fiber comes down, and as the capability of wireless, particularly fixed wireless, goes up, I think you will run into more people, both adopting the fiber side of the fiber solution, but I think you may also find people willing to do the hybrid network. Because another draw of wireless is that ability to be connected while being mobile. I mean, I think that's a large reason why a couple of the cable companies, at least for a stretch, were building wireless networks and offering the service as part of their package. So it's basically you have cable in the home, you have cable in the business, you know, but while you're out and about, you know, we will also let you have, or, you know, give you access to wireless.
Who doesn't? There's nobody that in our industry that survives without a smartphone today. So, I mean, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that for what your needs in your home, and especially in terms of content delivery, and I'll use an old-fashioned term, computational, meaning not like in the old days when you're talking about, you know, doing big science projects, but
right.
In terms of interaction with a greater world, you need fiber. You know, if I'm running around in my car, let's hope I'm not watching video at the same time. You're not even supposed to be texting at the same time.
Very true. Very true.
Which is a small bandwidth issue.
Right. I have a question. I want to shift a little bit to the operational side of the business. I was looking at...
And here you may have me flat-footed, so...
Well,
because my background is not technical.
That's fine. No, but I noticed in the last conference that there was a whole track devoted to marketing. And I've also noticed that there have been, in different cities, once a quarter, I believe, a session on marketing.
Yes.
It seems like the council has fully embraced the fact that marketing is kind of important. Now, I have a bias being a marketing guy from way back in the day, but, you know, I sort of feel like marketing is a crucial element. If you don't market effectively, you have no subscribers, you have no partners, you basically have no business.
Correct.
But technology companies historically have been slow to grasp that. You know, great engineers, great engineered product, you know, our marketing, we'll hire a salesperson, you know. So is my assumption correct that you guys have definitely pinpointed marketing as a key discipline that your members need to have and understand?
Yes. Good. I thought you were going to ask me about some kind of different deployment of some equipment or something. But
no.
Marketing is definitely definitely important because how do you create, you know, just like we're creating a value proposition for our members,
mm-hmm.
service providers need to create the value proposition for their customers. I mean, it's by selling them and all the wonderful things that are going to come as a result of having fiber to the home that you get adoption, correct? And
mm-hmm.
and your revenues become stabilized and, you know, so I think it's very important. I'm with you on that. I don't think the day of, you know, we're not the cable companies of the past if we have cable companies, but, you know, we sort of take it or leave it. We want people to feel, you know, excited about the product and to feel that we're offering them a value add. So you're right. That's
so
good...
basically, no, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all I was going to say.
No, you know, and that makes a lot of, like I said, I have a bias, so obviously I'm gonna fall that way. But, you know, it amuses me sometimes how, you know, we get hung up in certain words. And broadband adoption is just one of those. You know, everyone's talking about we got to have broadband adoption. We gave $300 million to entities to drive broadband adoption. You know, and after you kind of listen to this for about 6-8 months, you know, I think some people stop and go, well, that's just marketing.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it makes sense. Well, I mean, you know, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about some grand new wizard technology. We're talking about the basic fundamentals that have driven business since, you know, the beginning of time.
It is. It's explaining to consumers who both have fiber to the home how they can use it more effectively and why it's worth their using more expansively. But it's also explaining to the new customer or the potential new customer why they need it.
Right. And that's when you get these issues of, you know, well, we have this segment of the population and they don't understand. Well, maybe because you haven't explained it right. You know, because it's difficult to explain. I mean, this stuff is not easy.
Somebody was telling me that 95% of all jobs applications must be done online, that you
yep.
don't even have access. Access to the, and I, you know, from past experience, I know that's true. And you companies require that because it's the only way they can effectively track for regulation purposes. Isn't that
mm-hmm.
interesting?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if you're struggling to try to get the population employed, and you have segments that don't even have access to broadband, how are they going to know or apply for jobs?
Right. And I think that in those explained in those contexts, the issue makes a lot of sense. You know, I mean, but I think also understanding the discipline of marketing, and understanding that marketing isn't just the sales part, or it's not just the marketing communication part. It's the partnership development. You know, developing partners for marketing. That was a presentation I gave in Missouri. You know, which is all about, you know, your partners. How you choose those will have, you know, all the world and all about a difference on how effectively you can market. Because if you market with a local credit union as a partner, or you market with the local medical community as partners, they help drive the message to their various audiences so that the project team, you know, whether it's a community, a public-private partnership, they don't have to do all of that, you know. Not to mention the fact that those people who own those customer relationships are in a better position to tell those customers why they need to use your network.
Right. And things like you have to have access, you know, broadband access to interact with your schoolwork or, you know, teachers, or you get to take extra courses that aren't offered in your locale. I mean, those, again, are other areas that need to be played up as being important.
Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna go for broke here and ask another operations related question, which is, how, from your perspective, should both communities and private sector companies go about developing and making public private partnerships work?
You know, I think every community has a different first of all, every community has a different service provider structure, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we have many service providers that are anxious to invest in their communities, and I think, are looking to reach out to their communities and work with their communities to bring fiber to the home there. They already have good relationships and, you know, with very little assistance from the community, just, you know, some little prompting, they're going to continue to build those networks that are future-proof for them. I mean, and then you have other areas that, you know, maybe the service provider hasn't quite gotten the message yet. And I think that's when you have to, we talked about this earlier, leadership in the community, where a community expresses their desire to move into the future-proof future-proof network of the future, you know, get that deployed. And they may have to go out and do an RFP and bring in private providers to bid for that with the proper, as we talked earlier about the buy-down and investment and potential operating expenses.
Mm-hmm.
That might, you know, provide the incumbent service provider what it needs to invest as well. So I think, you know, you hope that your service provider, and I know many of our service providers have taken the lead in those deployments, but if they don't, the community may have to do a little incentive work.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, one of the things that I have been kicking around, and something you might want to throw out next week, see if it flies or not. But I was talking to the person who heads the equivalent of the League of Cities for the state of Missouri. And I said, you know, one thing that you guys might want to consider is rounding up, I don't know, 10, 15 communities in a region or a county or whatever, and create an incentive package for why businesses want to do a Google. Basically, you know, we are this community. We have these assets, these benefits, these resources. We think your company should come to our area and partner with us to build a network. Now, it's thoroughly, I guess, off the wall when you think about it initially, but, I mean, the idea was that 1,100 communities came up with some pretty creative ways to market themselves and why someone should come and build a network there. Wouldn't it make sense for some of those same communities to go out to other businesses or other industries and say, look, we're why you should partner with us for that. You win, we win, we win this, whatever, whatever. What do you think?
I think if the problem, it's a chicken and the egg problem. Sometimes those communities don't have the resources to do the marketing, that's one, nor do they have the resources. In other words, the fiber coming into their community will bring the resources as opposed to them having the resources today to attract the company. I mean, it's almost like they need to work with companies first saying, will you come here if we have this?
Right. And there's, you know, a certain amount of that as well. And it might even have been
it's good to work. Yeah, I would say working with your economic development councils. There's they're usually county-based throughout the states, and also every state should have statewide economic development board or council. They may be able to help individual communities do this kind of partnership building and coalition building. But they may help you do it in the context of bringing, you know, capturing a certain employer to come to a given area.
Right. And again, I think, you know, it's thinking outside of the box for the purposes of finding a new path to the same end goal. You know, everyone says, okay, well, we didn't get Google money. Well, great. But there's a whole bunch of other places that have money for whom the case can be made.
That's
correct. And maybe the League of Municipalities or some sort of city league is that body because they've got all the community connections, but they're also tasked with, you know, helping to market those cities to the outside world.
And that's why I was talking about, I mean, that's true for cities, for urban areas, but for, I was talking about, you know, less, that's why the Economic Development Council.
Oh, right, on the rural side of things.
Right.
Excellent. Well, you know, our time is just about up, and I want to thank you for, even though you're still getting your feet wet, spending time to come on the show and talk about, you know, a lot of these important issues. And I wish you, again, best of luck heading up the council and in your session next week. Hope lots of great ideas come from that. And we get a chance to talk again sometime in the future.
Oh, I would really look forward to that, Craig. I thank you. Your questions have really made me think about the coming year. As I said, I'm very excited about the opportunities for the council to continue to shine and grow even bigger. So I would be happy and thrilled to come back and talk to you after we finish our strategy session and get our next strategic plan put in place.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, and thank our audience and everybody. Have a great day, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye.